Hello, you are tuned into another edition of Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. I'm your host, Tony Doman, and here on this program each week, I find and feature a theme relating to Appalachian culture and folklife, and then play songs and feature stories all about our topic of choice. Today, I'll be airing more oral history stories and featuring archival audio from the Joseph Sargent Hall Collection from the Archives of Appalachia over at ETSU. This collection focuses on Hall's research of language and folklore of the people living in the Great Smoky Mountains in Appalachia, and it also takes an in-depth look at living in the mountains in the mid-20th century, from true stories to folklore and so much more. These stories I have for you today, I've got a variety of different stories, from bear stories to ghostly tales. There's just so much in this archival audio, so I'm excited to be diving back into these archives for today's program and bringing you some more really great stories. Last month I did this, and I also plan to do this for a few months as I dive on through this collection. I hope you do enjoy it. It's really fun to take a listen back in time and listen to these tales. So it's going to be a great program today. I'm so excited that you're joining me. First up, we got a tune to get things started, and then we're going to go ahead and dive on into this oral history for today's show. First up, I've Endured, Ola Belle Reid. I've Endured from Ola Belle Reid there. Today on Mountain Song and Story, I will be airing some archival audio from the Joseph Hall Collection at the Archives of Appalachia. If you are a regular listener to this program, you may remember that last month I started diving into this collection. There is just so much in this collection. It's huge. It spans from the mid or early 1900s, 1915, all the way to the 2000s, and it really focuses on between the late 30s, early 40s to the late 70s. So there is just so much here, and it's really exciting to have this audio and to be bringing you these stories. I really hope you enjoy. Like I said, this is a collection from the Archives of Appalachia over at East Tennessee State University. There are so many collections over there. I definitely encourage you to go check out the archives. This donation of this collection, it's not just these archival audio. There's books, there's field notes, tape recording, transcripts. So very much in this collection, but I'm really excited to just be bringing you the audio. It's great that this is digitized and accessible to listen to. And again, like I just mentioned, last month I brought to you some clips, just like what we're doing today, some clips from this collection of just different oral histories and stories from the Great Smoky Mountains. And again, we're doing this today. A little bit about Joseph Sargent Hall, who was a folklorist and did the field recordings for this collection. So he was born in 1906 and died in 92. And Joseph Sargent Hall was hired by the U.S. National Park Service for the summer of 1937 to capture the speech and culture of the Great Smoky Mountains among people living in or displaced by the coming of the park, the Great Smoky Mountain National Park. He traveled all over and made recordings with different people, and he found himself creating lifelong friendships and returning with his equipment to make recordings of the language and folklore of the area for decades. And I have here that it says in an interview in 1990, towards the very end of his life, he looked back and reflected on his contributions as a scholar. And I've got a quote here from the University of South Carolina's College of Arts and Sciences. It says, quote from Joseph Sargent Hall, "I was glad to make a collection which would be available for scholars for years to come to recover some idea of how people lived in this particular section, so beautiful and so productive in many ways, and with many people so strong in character and women carrying their part." So that's just a little bit about the folklorist who collected these stories, Joseph Sargent Hall. And it really is a fantastic collection. I've been diving into it. Like I said, there's so much here. So it's so great to be able to bring it to you all as a listener. And it's so wonderful that this is digitized and accessible to the public. So I'm really excited to dive back into this collection for today's program. So I'm going to quit yakking so we can take a listen to some of these stories. Mountain Song and Story is supported by the Archives of Appalachia, dedicated to gathering and preserving the written words, images, and sounds that document life in Southern Appalachia. Located on East Tennessee State University's campus, the Archives of Appalachia is open to the public Monday through Friday. Visit etsu.edu/archives to learn more. And once again, special thanks to Ryan Bernard from over at the Archives of Appalachia for pointing out this amazing collection and assisting me so that I can bring you this audio. So thank you, Ryan. Okay, so let's get on into it. In the upcoming clips, you're going to hear some stories, which I'll be playing all hour. These first clips will be some stories about a haunted house, a man named William Metcalf, who was a young man visiting his uncle when he saw in a field a calf on fire. Very, very scary. And you'll also hear an advertisement about this collection, which includes some bear stories. And I haven't been able to find out where this advertisement was broadcast. It's very interesting. It's almost like a sales pitch for the Smoky Mountains, so it's pretty neat. So we're going to dive on into that. And please stick around and stay tuned, because all this hour, again, we'll be playing these short little archived audio history stories of tales and folklore of the Great Smoky Mountains all this hour. So you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol.
I didn't tell that one very well, but my father's name was George Ellison. And where he lived? He lived at in the 15th District at Del Rio, Tennessee, for many, many years. In fact, he lived there all his married life and died there. And he knew this gentleman. They was young men together and went on courting trips together over the hills to see their girls. They were great friends all their lives. Ready? There's a place called Westmire, where it's kind of a whistle stop for, used to be for the trains. You could flag the train down if you wanted to go to Newport or any place. And just a few houses stood over there. And there was one pretty good sized house. We had, I guess, 6 or 8 rooms. An old man by the name of Will Raines lived in it. And the report had been for years that the house was haunted. So, one night, it was kind of cold and wet, and a couple of acquaintances of mine had been to Newport and got off the train at Westmar, and they had a long, long walk across the mountain to get home, so they decided they'd stay overnight with Mr. Raines and go home next day. And they'd forgotten about the stories of the haunted room in this house. So when they went in, Mr. Raines gave them their supper. They soon asked to be showed a bed. They was very tired. And Mr. Raines gave them this room that was supposed to be haunted. So Mr. Click told me this story. He said they got in the bed. He said pretty soon the friend that he had with him, Mr. Turner, fell asleep. Mr. Click said he was feeling kind of drowsy. And said all at once it seemed that the door of the room opened and he could hear footsteps round through the room, just like someone walking over the floor, and they was moaning. Said every once in a while he'd say, "Oh, where am I going to put it? Where will I put it?" And he said it scared him. He didn't know what to think about it, so he used his elbow in Mr. Turner's ribs and got him awake. Said, "Listen, buddy," said, "you hear what I hear?" Buddy raised up in the bed and listened a few minutes and said, this thing was still walking around over the floor saying, "Oh, Lord, where will I put it? Oh, Lord, where will I put it?" So Mr. Turner, he cleared his throat. He said, "By gosh, put it where you got it." So Mr. Click said he just stood it as long as he could. He said, it just every once in a while it'd make that noise and that moaning noise and say that. So he called Mr. Raines and asked him if he had any other place he could sleep the rest of the night. Mr. Raines said, "All right," says, "I'd forgot about that room being haunted." He said, "Just come on in here," he says, "and sleep in the room here with where the old lady and I are." He said, "There's an extra bed." So they spent the rest of the night in the room with Mr. Raines. This story was told me by Jan Click, who lived in the old 15th District and was, he was father of a family at the time he told me. It was about, did I tell the day? I think it's about, he told me this story, I think it was about 1916 or 17, somewhere along there, that this story was told to me by him. My father-in-law, William Metcalf, was born and raised in the mountains of North Carolina. And he told me that when he was a young man, about 18 or 19 years old, he said that he started one day to visit his Uncle Bill that lived way over, I think it's on Shelton Laurel. And he said his Uncle Bill had some awfully pretty girls, so he wanted to dress up real nice when he went. So he dressed in the latest style for that time. He said men then wore high-button shoes, and instead of a coat or overcoat or something like that, they wore a shawl. So he said he had a real nice, expensive shawl. and brand new button shoes, and said, "You're just looking real sharp." And he had to walk the entire distance, so it took him till after dark to get there. Said he started to over a near way through a just going a narrow trail through the woods to get there a little quicker. He's crossing a foot log over a small creek, and it'd been raining. The waters was up. He said very muddy, but he said he's going across to the other side to hit this ridge that was a near road to Uncle Bill's. And just before he got to the far end of the footbridge, he happened to look over on the opposite bank and said he saw a look like a calf of fire laying there on the bank. And he said he could even see it roll its eyes, look at him. And said it just scared the daylights out of him. And he didn't know whether to go on the way he'd started or turn and go back home. Said finally figured out it'd be best to go on the way he's going because his Uncle Bill was the closest to his home was the closest house he knew of. So he said he gave a leap off of the foot log and he started running. He said it seemed to him like the farther he went, the faster he got. He got pretty close to where his Uncle Bill lived, and he got into a field that they had cleared. They just chopped it off, and quite a few rhododendron bushes was growing along the trail. They chopped those off, and the snags were sticking up, and said he was running so fast he didn't notice these snags until he caught his new button shoe on one of them. Said he just tore the sole loose from the top, just ruined his shoe. And on the way, he also lost his nice new shawl. He said he just kept running as hard as he could, didn't look behind to see if the calf was falling or not, but he wasn't taking any chances. He ran on to his Uncle Bill's, and Uncle Bill had a bunch of mean dogs. They'd bite you. So he said the dogs charged out to meet him. He said there's no time to stop at the front door and knock. He said he just caught the porch post, and he climbed up it to the overhead porch. There was a porch on the second story. He said he went right up that and through the room and back down the stairs. And by the time his Uncle Bill got to the front door to open it to see what the dogs was barking at, he yelled at him and told him he didn't mind opening the door. He says, "Sure, I am behind you." So he said he told his Uncle Bill about what he'd seen and tried to get him to go back with him. But Uncle Bill said he wouldn't go out in the rain at that hour of the night if there's a dozen calves of fire laying on the bank of the creek. And this story was told by my father-in-law, William Metcalf, in, I guess, about 1915 was the year that he told it.
Good afternoon, this is Jacques Alb. The beach is found in none other than the good old Smoky Mountains. Dr. Joseph Hall was responsible for the recording of the language and music of the inhabitants indigenous in that region. Vocabulary and manners of speaking possessed by these people are recollections of jargon and vocabulary actually utilized by the original settlers of this country. So, rear back in your splint-bottom sitting chairs and listen to Lona Hicks speaking of the care she gave to a lamb. Note her use of the vernacular.
Well, Mommy, she gave me a little old pet lamb. I'd rock it to sleep. I had no kids then, and I'd rock that lamb to sleep, and I'd bed it down in the corner. And it'd lay there the next morning. I had nothing to do the next morning but get out and holler, "Come here, Carlo." That sheep would come. And when I went to school, I was gone 9 months at the time. And I'd go out and holler for her, "Come here, Carlo." And she'd come. Well, she growed up to be a grown sheep. And I'd go in the woods where she was at and hunt her up. All I had to do was holler, "Hey, Carlo, come here." And then I'd get her by the back, and that sheep would bring me to the road. But it's a wonder she hadn't left me over a rock cliff somewhere.
There you have it, our first selection, which was taken from a collection of interviews conducted playing a role for the entertainment of guests and for pacifying children. The stories have a variety of subjects, but the ones which are most popular have to do with the hunt. Tales of the methods for hunting bears are the most widely told. Here's a humorous hunting story dealing with a drunken bear.
He said, "Get you about a half a gallon of moonshine and a half a gallon of this mountain honey. See, the bears are crazy about this mountain honey." And he said, "Mix it all up and take it out on a trail and stir it up." And he said, "The bear will come at her night." He said he had a cornfield and was coming in it and tearing down his corn, and said he'd go and watch, and said they'd wait so late in the night he couldn't see how to shoot them. Said he fixed up this mountain dew or whatever you call it and honey and just set it right where it'd come over the fence. Said he went out one Sunday morning and said didn't even take his gun, just see if the bear'd come about this hunting. Big candy bucket. Poured it in. He said he went up and looked in the candy bucket and said, "Sure enough, all the honey and this moonshine is gone." And said he got to looking where it started down through his new ground. It's about half angle too on these steep mountains. And he said it got drunk and it started rolling and said it just tore the corn down and said he just followed it and said went down to the bottom of the hill and he followed on down and says laying in a fence corner, said just drunk as a fool. He said all, he said didn't have his guns on Sunday morning. He said he got him a big stick and just burst his head.
Willie Oakley.
Sitting on the front porch on a summer afternoon, in a straight back chair on two legs, leaned against the wall. Watch the kids playing with June bugs on a string, and chase the glowing fireflies when evening shadows fall. In my Tennessee mountain home, life is as peaceful as a baby's sigh. In my Tennessee mountain home, crickets sing in the fields nearby. Honeysuckle vine clings to the fence along the lane. Their fragrance makes the summer wind so sweet. And on a distant hilltop, an eagle spreads its wings, and a songbird on a fence post sings a melody. Just laughing, talking, making future plans. And when the folks ain't looking, you might steal a kiss or two, sitting in the porch swing holding hands. In my Tennessee mountain home, life is as peaceful as a baby.
My Tennessee mountain home there, you know who that's from. Dolly Parton. If you are just tuning in, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story right here on Radio Bristol. My name's Tony Doman, and I am excited that you are joining us on this hour of the program. Today, I am diving again on into the Joseph Sargent Hall collection from ETSU's Archives of Appalachia to bring you some stories and tales of people living in the Appalachian region in the mid-20th century. This is a great collection full of folklore and stories of these people through their own voices. They were recorded by folklorist Joseph Hall. And yeah, we've got a whole hour full of these types of stories. And if you like what you hear, please let me know, because I really enjoy diving through these archives and finding these stories. And I really hope that you enjoy it too. I want to try to do this at least every month with help from the archives. So we've got a lot to get through. And if you like it, give me a shout, because I sure would love to hear from you. And we're going to go ahead and get back on into some of these stories now. And stick around and stay tuned, because we got a lot more left.
I'm the doc. I am Zori Jenkins, the daughter of Feeney Ramsey.
Where do you live?
I live on Cosby.
And where did your mother live?
My mother lived on Cosby, and she lived in North Carolina in her young days, and was fixing to move out, and one of her neighbor girls, a girl come stay all night with her, and it was nearly dark, and the girl came in, and they heard a noise on the porch, like something patting, and she opened the door and couldn't see anything. And she closed the door and went back, and it made more noise than ever. And she went back and opened the door again, and the noise stopped. And she went back and got the light and was aiming to open the door and shine the light. And the neighbor girl told her that her grandfather said that was the way a panther done. And that frightened her, and she closed the door. And the girl wanted to fire the gun, but my father was gone, and they couldn't load the old rifle back if they fired it. And the girl told her that her grandfather said to burn powder, and it would leave. And they had three dogs. Two young ones was out, and they was barking, and the old one was in the house, and she slipped it out the back way and went to burning gunpowder in the fire, and the panther started off in a little while, and the dogs run it away. About 1893, this happened in the year of 1893. And once my mother, Vinnie Ramsey, went to a neighbor's house, and she was churning and had some milk on the stove heating, and said that somebody was witching the milk till she couldn't churn, and she was heating it so they couldn't witch it. And then another time she went to a place, and they had a horse's bridle on the churn, a churning. And she wanted to know what that was for, and they told her that somebody was witching the cows till they couldn't churn the milk, and they said if they would churn with a bridle on the churn, that they couldn't witch it.
You want me to do the talking this thing now?
Yeah.
Reuben Williamson, 85 years old. George Hooper told me that him and his uncle, Joe Gunter, started one night to get some whiskey. They went down an old roadway from his home to his grandfather's, and they heard something come in the road, looked and saw a black animal about the size of a 2-year-old calf. Its ears are sticking straight up. It had its eyes about the size of a pint cup. As red as balls of fire. He said they stood and waited a little bit, thought they'd take to the woods, but kept coming straight the road toward them, and they turned and broke to run. And he looked back one time after they broke to run. He said the thing is about the length of a 10-foot rail behind him. And he run up to the home of Lily Settles and run through the yard gate and into the house, knocked the door down and pitched into the floor.
That's the end of it, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it. Gus Gunter told me that he'd just started the big creek, him and Alec Giles, with a load of whiskey. And they just got to the top of the mountain, low gap, a little way to the other side of the low gap, and he heard something went off on this side of the mountain, about like, dynamite or a ton of dynamite. And he looked and he seed something coming across in the air just over the top of the timber. And it fell about 100 yards behind him in the path, just like a hogshead or a bear bursted there. He kept going. He went down yon side towards Big Creek, and he looked back and he seed something coming. Looked like a light, more like a lantern. And when he stopped, it overtook him as the man. It appeared to be a man with a soldier uniform on. He run up close to him and stopped. And he stepped out and spoke to it. Says, "You're a United States man, I see." And the feller wouldn't speak. And said he went to take hold of him, and the feller just kept out of his reach all the time. Eddie told him, he says, "If you don't speak to me," he says, "I'll shoot you directly." Then he said that the feller, its eyes began to roll over and over just like balls of fire in his head. He noticed it wasn't no human, couldn't do that. And he said when the thing got ready to leave, it just raised up and sailed through the air across on another ridge, 100 yards or two away.
Oh, then, he wanted to, he knew it was a hand and he wanted to cross water?
Huh?
He knew it was a hand and he wanted to cross water?
He said he thought there's a hank, and he wanted to cross water to get away from it.
They said if you crossed water, that got shed of the hank.
Mr. Williamson, would you mind telling about the wolf pits in the old days?
There's a place up there they call the wolf pit. Pit dug. It's 10, 12 foot across it, straight down. The banks are straight down. And they laid a plank part of the way across it, laid a sheep head on that. And the wolf would walk out that plank to get the sheep's head, and he'd fall in there and couldn't get out. Straight up, 10 or 12 foot deep, and he couldn't jump out. And they killed the wolf. They caught a lot of wolves that way, the old first settlers up there on Cosby.
I suppose people were much bothered by wolves back then, weren't they?
Yeah. Yes, they was.
Could you tell about the wolves in the old days, Mr. Webb? How
that
wolves kill the sheep?
Back then, the wolves, they'd kill their people's sheep pretty bad. That's the way they had of getting them.
About what year was that? Or how long ago was that?
Oh, that's been maybe 100 years.
Right.
The first settlers in that country up there.
Uh-huh. I guess that was around maybe 100 years ago. The first settlers of that country up there.
Mr. Webb, could you tell about those handed places when you were a boy? Some of the various places that you were afraid to go by? That's what you told me, you know, when you were a boy.
Back when I was a boy, there's places along the road where they claimed as hanted. And I was awful afraid to pass them at the dark. I'd always try to make it in home before dark, afraid to pass them places.
What kind of places were they?
Well, I don't know why come them to call them that, but some places they'd been fellas killed or something.
Go ahead now.
Sam Stiles was born in 1879.
On Cosby Creek?
On Cosby's Creek. Lived here practically all my life. Spent about 10 years in Florida and about 6 years in the West in my time.
Could you tell about some of those experiences that you heard about the
door peg tail?
Yeah, that's right.
Well, I can't tell about what time in the year that was, nothing of the kind, but anyhow, we lived in back up here in this mountainous country here, had a new house. And used a door peg and didn't know what a lock was. And this door peg where we had it drove into the log would jump out there and did jump out every night or so for a year. And finally, after so long, some lady bought a place right close by us and come there and stayed all night, and the night she stayed, it jumped out and never did come out anymore.
What did that have to do with the wolves around there?
Well, the wolves there caught our sheep there, you know. And the lady stayed there that night and bought a little home right close to us, and she said if there's any wolves went to howl around there, she wouldn't live there. But we didn't let her know they howled that night. And then in a few nights after that is when the old man went a-hunting, you know, and run into the gang that had the sheep killed. Had a gang of sheep killed, and I don't know how many, about three of the sheep was killed, and I don't know how many of the wolves, but anyhow, there's a gang of them. We went and carried the wool in, and they sheared it around there and knit socks and made petticoats and jeans coats and so on out of it. Cloth. Had old looms or something to fix this yarn up, make yarn and wove it into cloth.
What about the time that you were sent for the granny woman? Could you tell about that?
That'd be pretty good. Yeah, I had an uncle that lived right close to us, and we was the only one that had anything to ride in that country, like a mule. We had a mule. I done going there to the doctor for everybody and went to mill and so on the mule. And I went out to the granny woman. I was the one that had to go to all the doctors and everything. Had an uncle there and his wife was sick, and I went out to the granny for his wife. And she had attended once before, and I think he'd failed to pay or anything, and so she says, I'm not a-going. And I begged and pleaded with her to go, and she just firmed down she wasn't a-going. I had an old big Mother Hubbard dress hanging on her bed leg. After I'd begged till I'd give out, I finally just grabbed her dress and jumped in the bed with her. Went to try to put it on. She says, get out, Sam. Says I, and I, when I got out, she didn't say she'd go. She just got them put on, tore out, and went on with me.
What about the plug of tobacco?
And she had to get her a twist tobacco, her old homespun, and had a good pocket on her dress. Got that in her pipe, and she tore out then so she could smoke whenever she got to her destination, wherever it's at.
Got in a fight. Rooster knocked a nigger plumb out of sight. Nigger says that'll be all right. I'll meet you at the hen house tomorrow night.
You shall be free.
Shout morning.
You shall be free.
In the morning.
You shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
Love my
wife and I love my baby. I love my flapjack floating gravy. Make them biscuits good and brown. Turn them flapjacks around and around.
You shall be free.
In the morning.
You shall be free.
Shout morning.
You shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free. It'll be my wife. She jumped at me with a butcher knife. I jumped back to do my best. Run my head in a hornet's nest. What a thing.
You shall be free.
In the morning.
You shall be free.
Everybody.
You shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
I love my wife.
I love my baby. I love my flapjack golden gravy. Take them biscuits good and brown. Flapjacks around and around.
You shall be free.
Shout morning.
You shall be free.
In the morning.
You shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
Some folks said
that a nigger won't steal. I caught three in my cornfield. One had a bushel and the other had a peck. One had a rope near around his neck.
You shall be free.
In the morning.
You shall be free.
Shout morning.
The
Lord sets you free.
Love my wife.
Love my baby. Love my flapjack golden gravy. Make them biscuits good and brown. Turn them flapjacks round and round.
You shall be free.
In the morning.
You shall be free.
That morning.
You shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
trim. One had a person and the other had a pet. One had a crib run around his neck.
He shall be free.
In the morning.
He shall be free.
Everybody.
He shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
Love my wife.
Love my baby. Love my flapjack golden gravy.
Make them biscuits good and brown.
Turn them flapjacks round and round.
He shall be free.
Everybody.
He shall be free.
In the morning.
He shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
Love my wife. Love my baby.
Love my flapjack golden gravy.
Make them biscuits
good and brown. Turn them flapjacks round and round. In the morning,
he shall be free.
That morning,
he shall be free.
When the good Lord sets you free.
All right, if you're just tuning in again, you are listening to Mountain Song and Story here on Radio Bristol, and we are diving into a collection of folklore stories of people living in the Great Smoky Mountains from the collection, the Joseph Sargent Hall collection from the Archives of Appalachia. You just heard some stories there, some stories about some haints. Pretty spooky stuff. There's some pretty scary stories in here. I mean, folklore is just so very interesting. I really like the one about the witching the cows that we heard just a while back too, and all these wolf stories and ghostly stories about seeing that soldier too is pretty scary. So we got a few more stories. I think I have time for a few more this hour before I have to roll on out of here. So we'll dive back on in, and thank you so much for sticking around and listening to these stories. If you enjoy it, again, please let me know, because it's a lot of fun to put these kind of shows together. And yeah, let's get on back in and see what else is going on this track.
On in the Webb's Creek section of Sevier County.
And where he went to school?
Well, I first went to school on Webb's Creek, to the free schools there, and then I moved to Cook County, and I went to free schools there for just about two falls, I believe. And then I went to a subscription school in Gatlinburg. It's the last school I went to, just before I was 21 years old.
What was a subscription school like?
Well, each student just paid so much a month for his tuition. And that wasn't but very little. They didn't have to pay like they do now for their schools, or anything else for that matter.
How long did you go to school?
Well, I don't know just how long I went in all. I just went about 3 months in that subscription school.
I mean, when you were growing up.
Well, I couldn't say that. Because our schools didn't last as long as they do now, I know that. And like they said in the journal a short time ago, they stopped two or three weeks for fodder in the fall. People would pull fodder, and they'd stop the school for maybe 2 weeks. And then people would pull fodder. That is mentioned in the journal not so very long ago. Well, a lot of people didn't know what they meant by pulling fodder. I explained that in the Knoxville Journal. They pull, reach to the next to the top blade of fodder, and they run one hand down on each side of the stalk, pull the fodder off, and stuck it down between two stalks and let it cure, and then they'd tie it into bundles, have to work after night when it was moist. They couldn't do the work in the dry, hot part of the day.
You were trained to be a teacher one time, didn't you?
I guess so. I taught 2 months.
What did you have to do to get to be a teacher?
Well, I had to take an examination and get a certificate.
You said stood an examination.
Yes, sir.
What is it meant by standing an examination?
Well, the teacher or the superintendent asked the questions. They'd write the questions, put them up on a board. They'd put their students or their teachers, you might call it, they'd have to answer these questions, And if they answered enough questions, they got a good grade. If they didn't, why, they were just out.
You say that schools graded differently when you were a boy than
yes,
they do
sir.
Now. What did you mean by that?
Well, they're classified in a different way. Now, you know, they have the first, second, and third grades and so on, but at that time they didn't. They were just primary schools. They had high schools scattered about, of course, but they didn't grade like they do now. But now I've not been in their schools. I don't know just how they do grade. I know they have the different grades.
Could you tell about that experience you had when you were a teacher?
Well, that mischievous boys?
That's right.
Why, yes, that is very annoying. The students would complain they'd lost something. Something was out of place. And after a while, it could be mysteriously found somewhere. So I got to watching after it, and I saw one boy run and hide another boy's hat in the end of a holler log. And I didn't let it be known until the hat was missing. Then when I began to inquire, nobody seemed to know anything about it. So I just took a group of boys in rotation, asked each one separately if they knew anything about the hat. Well, nobody seemed to know. But I give the guilty boy a real thrashing before I explained that I knowed about it. And that just settled all that little mischievous, no more things stolen or misplaced during my 2 months.
How did you say you found him, the guilty boy?
I saw him hide the hat.
Oh, you'd seen him?
Yes.
Mr. Valentine, could you tell now about the man who killed the bear?
Well, I just heard tell of it. The bear first killed some chickens, 5, I believe, and they watched for the bear the next night, and the bear come back to the place, but it didn't leave. And they divided the meat out. Everybody that wanted some got some of it. They offered me some, but I didn't accept it. But I did ask the owner of the chickens if he notified the warden when he killed the bear. And he said, no, the bear didn't notify me.
This is good old Cosby. James H. Groom's my name, 64-year-old. I'm going to give you a little piece on a man here of the name of Shuby John Sutton, the tale he told me when he took a sheriff's place. He went to High Sheriff Smith, asked him for to take a sheriff's place. Smith told him he would have to swear off from drinking. So he said he swore before Smith he would not take a drink in no way unless it was poured in him. Okay, along come some fellas that he took the place and said, Shuby, I have some awful good whiskey. He said, boys, I have taken an oath to get this place. I cannot drink unless it was poured in me, but you can pour it in me. So they helped me, and they poured a drink in me. So I got feeling it pretty well, and they begun to want to leave, and I went with them. I didn't get very far till I said, gentlemen, hold me again. And they helped me and poured another one in me. So I guess that's about all I knew on that one.
All right, folks, thank you so much for tuning in. Remember, you can catch this program, Mountain Song and Story, every Thursday at 4 o'clock right here, each and every week on Radio Bristol. You can also check out past shows if you visit the Mountain Song and Story program page, which is found on over at listenradiobristol.org. You can check out this program and all of the other amazing programs that we have here on the station. There is so much to check out there at listenradiobristol.org. So go on over and do that when you get a chance. As always, I'll have today's playlist and materials from the show up there. So please go stop on over to the program blog page to learn more if you want to learn some more about this collection from the Archives of Appalachia. Special thanks again to the Archives of Appalachia for assisting me with research for today's show, and special thanks to Ryan Bernard for helping me as well. Thank you so much. Folks, once again, my name is Toni Doman. I can't thank you enough for tuning in and hanging out with me here on today's program. Again, if you like what you hear, let me know, because I'm putting shows like this together at least once a month because they're a lot of fun to do. So if you like what you hear, let me know, and I will keep doing these types of programs. Again, thank you so much for tuning in. I will catch you right here next week. Digging with Big Lawn is coming up next.
There was a captain man, used to plow and sing, and he loved that mule, and the mule loved him. When the day got long, as it does about now, I'd hear him singing to his muley cow, calling, come on, my sweet old girl, and I'd bet the whole damn world and we're gone. City.